You're listening to podcasts from the Congressional Internet Caucus Advisory Committee, www.netcaucus.org.
Thank you. Enjoy your lunch. Sorry to interrupt. My name is Tim Lorden. For those who do not know me, I am the Executive Director of the Congressional Internet Caucus Advisory Committee. This is the inaugural State of the Mobile Net Conference. A lot of you are familiar maybe with the State of the Net that we have in January and the State of the Net West, which will be in August 5th of this year in Santa Clara, California. I wanted to thank, this is our first time exploring mobile issues in such a large setting. We've done congressional briefings on mobile privacy, mobile spectrum for years in the Capitol building through our traditional congressional briefing process. But this is the first time we've ever really kind of looked at it from a variety of different disciplines, and we're very excited about it. I wanted to thank all of our sponsors and all the support from everybody who's helped us with the intellectual capital to put this all together, CTIA, Verizon, Microsoft, AT&T, and I've left somebody else out, and I apologize. T-Mobile, everybody's been fantastic in helping us put this all together. Nokia, and I forgot about Google. I apologize. One thing I'd like to do is apologize. What we're going to do is introductory remarks, a keynote. Then we'll go into a general session explaining what is the mobile net, which I'm actually curious about. We'll then break into two breakout sessions, which are just on the hall here in Columbia A and B. They're concurrent, two different sets of them. And then we'll finish up with one general session on policy framework facing the mobile net. One thing I also need to say is Anish Chopra, who was confirmed to speak today, it killed me. He's now nominated as the federal CTO. I don't know if you had anything to do with this, Susan, but it's really killing me today. He is not able to make comments until his confirmation hearing before the Senate, but we wish him well for his confirmation hearing. So I apologize. Anish will not be with us today. On more sober news, most of you perhaps do not know one of the founders of my organization, in which launched the Congressional Internet Caucus and its advisory committee over 13 years ago, Judith Krug from the American Library Association, passed away about a week and a half ago. She was the co-chair of my board of directors. She was the driving force behind this organization, and she is responsible. She's one of the few people responsible mostly for everything that you see and everything that we do. She created the Freedom to Read Foundation, and she championed intellectual freedom and free speech during her tenure at the American Library Association. She will be sorely missed. She also created Banned Book Week at the American Library Association to promote intellectual freedom. And again, we will miss her. And her obituary and a New York Times editorial is available on our website at neted.org. So, tough segue to Susan Crawford, who did share the misfortune of actually sharing kind of office space with me for about a year, about 6 years ago, and listening to my rants and raves on a daily basis. Susan is now special assistant to the President for Science, Technology, and Innovation Policy. She also serves as a member of the National Economic Council. She's on leave from Michigan State Law School. And from 2005 to 2008, served on the ICANN board, which is as difficult as sitting next to me in the office, I would imagine. And she's also formerly with Wilmer Cutler Pickering, which is now Wilmer Hala. She was a former partner. But we are pleased to have her with us today to make some opening remarks. And congratulations, Susan, on the appointment.
Thank you very much. Thanks so much for having me, and thanks to Tim Lorden and his terrific crew. These bipartisan, thoughtful conferences are really central to this ecosystem, these people who are involved with telecom and internet and information policy. And it's Tim who pulls it all together, because this ecosystem is thriving, and it needs to talk to itself in its self-organizing way. So I'm very grateful to be here. I'm also very grateful to be serving as a member of the Obama administration. This is a president who deeply understands technology. This is the first president with a computer on his desk and a BlackBerry that he fiercely held onto in his pocket. He's not the first president to figure out how to use technology to diminish distance. FDR did it with the radio chats. And President Obama is doing it with podcasts and digital town halls. None of us will forget the tweet by which Biden was announced. And I myself have met the staffer who drafted that tweet. So that was a big moment. And I wish I could convey to you exactly what it's like to be in the White House right now. There was a joke around the time of the transition, sort of a summer camp for workaholics. It's not quite like that, but there are lots of extraordinarily compassionate and intelligent and focused people, men and women, striding purposefully through the halls. President Obama seems to have hired a lot of multitaskers. They're making good judgments every 2 or 3 minutes and typing briskly on their BlackBerries. Because I do think it's very important that President Obama held on to that BlackBerry. This is the beginning. It's too much to say we're right at the beginning, but we're in the very early stages of a hugely transformative moment for mobile technology. As you know, because you came to lunch, mobile communication is already the most widely used form of communications technology in human history. 4 billion people in the world have mobile handsets. More people have them than don't. I'm looking forward to the number of times the word transformative will be used today, because we can play a kind of mobile bingo using that. But it truly is transformative. And the advent of mobile computing is revolutionary. With real high-speed mobile communications and a critical mass of devices that actually carry out that convergence dream that we've been talking about for years now, our world changes. And this change won't be merely doing what we used to faster or more conveniently. That's not it. It's not that we'll just have better phone capabilities or better auto-correction for email or that our thumbs will make fewer mistakes. No, I think that scale matters, and that scale and bandwidth and computational power, no other way to say it, will make for a difference in kind of communication, not just degree. And we don't know exactly what's going to happen, but we can see that this is a hockey stick moment, especially once that computational power gets into devices. So they're not, we don't think of them as phones so much, but as handheld computers. And I'm deliberately using the word communication here as what human beings want to do rather than services. That's what human beings want, more advanced, more useful ways of full bandwidth communicating. And that's what high-speed mobile communications provide. Connectivity has always been valued far more than content. It's connectivity that matters to human beings. So let's remember where we are now, and how could we forget? We're in a huge economic downturn. We face tremendous challenges, and we have great opportunities. We need to spur short-term economic growth while simultaneously building the long-term architecture that will give us sustainable jobs, prosperity, and economic growth for many generations to come. My own view is that technology and information policy is absolutely central to that long-term architecture. At the same time, we're fixing the financial regulatory system, we're shoring up the banks, we're finding ways to help people keep their homes. We need to be making progress on our long-term innovation agenda, encouraging the development of new ideas that will produce new ways of making a living. Long-term job growth has got to be our goal, and technology and innovation policy will help us get there. And I think we can use mobile technology to innovate our way towards a better economic future. We have to be able to answer the question, what happens after stimulus? After we've made our targeted, timely, and temporary efforts to stimulate job growth in the United States, we have to have a long-term plan. We will not be done with creating jobs. We need to encourage, again, the generation of new ideas and new ways of making a living, and these jobs need to be sustainable. With mobile technology, these jobs can be mobile, productive, and sustainable. And new forms of devices can help us find new ways of making a living. There are barriers to this bright mobile future. I can think of at least three. One is the lack of reasonably priced backhaul access in this country. fiber or microwave, backhaul access to which opportunistic mobile carriers can connect to be able to reach the Internet and provide high-speed communications to their customers. Another is obviously the regulatory scarcity of spectrum. It feels as if it's scarce because it has been allocated and regulated in a way that makes it feel scarce. We need to find whether it might be possible to reallocate spectrum specifically for Internet access uses, licensed or unlicensed. This will not happen quickly. It will happen slowly. But a good first step might be to map spectrum use throughout the country and get some detailed information about exactly how it's being used and allocated. We need to continue experimentation with cognitive radio, ultra-wideband, and all the other ways we can share spectrum without creating undue interference. A third barrier is location data. We need to figure out how to make geolocation data widely available so that anyone can introduce a new wireless application that brings work home. So those are three barriers I want to look into lowering: backhaul, regulatory scarcity of spectrum, and geolocation data. And when some of those barriers come down, the converged devices will follow, and they will be great devices. I will never forget the day the iPhone first came out. I was riding on the subway in Manhattan, and two complete strangers felt they needed to show me their new iPhone just so we could all share the experience. Apple has now sold over 17 million iPhones, including 4 million in just the last quarter of last year. That kind of excitement demonstrates our desire for true, computable computing handheld ability, beautiful interfaces, useful widgets, and the ability to get work done wherever we are. Sometime, I think about a half an hour ago, actually, the billionth download of an iPhone app happened. Think about that, the billionth download. That's a lot of downloads. And we're here, of course, at lunch to celebrate that. The advent of mobile high-speed internet connectivity is as fundamental as the introduction of the open PC, as the introduction of TCP/IP and the internet for commercial wired use. Mobile high-speed internet connectivity, in a sense, combines all of these earlier developments. And as soon as we can figure out the power question and the non-interchangeable charger questions, we will have made a lot of progress. Mobility can also advance the usefulness of government to its customers, to all of you. We can push useful information that people actually want and need, take weather, for example, to their handheld devices when they've asked for it. The government creates terabytes of data every single day, and someone somewhere can make a business model out of the availability of that data. Watch for data.gov, which is going to be coming in a few months. Our chief information officer, Vivek Kundra, is very focused on this, and it's extremely exciting. The idea is to make open, structured feeds of government data available online, again, so that other businesses can figure out how to use them and make useful information available to people, useful widgets. This government is able to admit that it doesn't have all the great ideas, that people out in the world will be developing those great ideas. Last week, the president authorized U.S. telecom carriers to operate in Cuba. This is tremendously important. It shows that the president understands that communication is central, that, again, this desire for high-speed bandwidth between humans is central. The administration is dedicated to encouraging positive change in Cuba in the most basic way, by facilitating greater contact between family members through improved wireless technology. So today, for this first brief talk, I'm here to convey the deep pride that all of us in the administration feel in serving this president, and to connect that pride, for me in particular, to his authentic interest in science, technology, and innovation. And to say to you all that I think we do have a bright wireless future, technical future ahead of us, and that I personally hope we get there sooner rather than later. Thank you all very much.